Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the second presentation in the Manawatū U3A's Spring Seminar Series, Manawatū Memories, Reflecting on the Past, Embracing the Future. Following on from last week's talk about the Ian Matheson Archives in Palmerston North, today's speaker will tell us about the Coach House Museum and Fielding and District Community Archive. Our speaker is Marilyn Whiteman, hiding almost at the back there. She taught night school for 24 years and also served as an itinerant cello teacher and has also been involved in adult literacy. About 20 years ago, Marilyn joined a working committee to develop a community archive in Fielding. She was also involved with the New Zealand Society of Genealogists and was a member of the Manawatū Historic Vehicle Collection Trust. So when the archive was officially opened, Marilyn was appointed as manager, a position from which she retired, I think, in 2022. Though she continues to serve as a volunteer. Her contribution to the preservation and organisation of the community archives was acknowledged with a Manawatū Community Honours Citation in 2015. In addition to managing the archives, Marilyn has used them to prepare displays and to write articles and books, including contributions to the Manawatū Journal of History. In Stainton Workman's story, published in 2018, Marilyn wrote about her great-great-great-grandfather, later known as John Stainton Workman, a 19th-century Scottish-born sailor and whaler who settled in New Zealand. Marilyn is also the co-author of Hearths and Fielding Families, which introduces 45 houses as a way of reconstructing the domestic lives of people who lived in Fielding during the later part of the 19th century. Drawing on materials in the community archive, this work was awarded an Earl Creativity and Development Trust grant in 2021. Now, I do understand that Marilyn has a lot of slides to show us, a lot of PowerPoint slides, so I won't take any more of her time. Please welcome Marilyn Whiteman.
The reason I'm here today, is, as was pointed out, is because I wrote a book on the whaler, but the whaler was given a Māori bride by Te Rapraha on Kapiti Island, so I also am part of the Wairapa Moana Incorporation, and just two weekends ago they had their AGM, and as you can see by the lovely slick brochure, look at it, beautiful. Lots of diagrams. Their PowerPoint presentation was, there's no prizes for the few grammatical errors in my presentation. I might be good at archiving, but not so good on PowerPoint presentations. Okay, Coach House Museum. I understand quite a few of you have been there. It's at 127 South Street, Fielding. A long, long time ago, there was a thought, let's have our museum here in Fielding. So there was a public meeting held in Fielding last night. The chair was the mayor, da-da-da-da-da. All these people were there, and one lady, unnamed. So that was, yeah, let's take it to the borough council and we'll have a museum. Roll on 1974, and it was the 100th celebration of the founding of Fielding. I mean, the first settlers arrived. They took over the old borough council chamber, which was by then empty, and had a temporary museum. And down the bottom there it says, Fielding has a most interesting and worthwhile museum. At present, most of the exhibits are on loan. Let's hope it leads to something else. Well, there's a whole lot of groups came together to put the museum to what it is today. So it started off in the 1960s with the Historic Vehicle Collection Trust, and a lot of men had been going around the district and seeing these lovely carriages rotting away under hedges on farms or deteriorating in a leaky barn, and so they started to actively collect horse-drawn vehicles and restore them. There's a book written by Maurice Watt, and he instigated 12 treks around, mainly around the lower half of the North Island, and he even took the horses and carriages across on the ferry and did one around the top of the South Island as well. And everywhere they went, they were promoting the idea of a museum. And their activity there in the community was a good instigator to get the museum finally underway. This is another example of the fielding community. This is the post office. It was built in 1903 and opened by a government dignitary from Wellington. And the land for the post office was donated by Martha Hasty, who owned the Fielding Hotel, right opposite the post office. And her one stipulation was, okay, I'll give you the land, but make sure the front door faces onto my hotel. And it also was very convenient that all coaches going to and from around the district left from the post office. In 1942, you may know about the Macedon earthquake, which affected quite a wide area, including a lot of damage over this way. And that Fielding post office got badly damaged. Now, just so happened that the Second Field Company of New Zealand Engineers Army were camped at the race course in Fielding. So they probably rolled up their sleeves very enthusiastically. Oh, good, let's demolish the post office. And they put the clock tower into storage. It became the Millennium Project for Fielding. And so it was great organisation and meetings and everything else from about the late 1990s onwards. And there it is, completely restored again. And a clock, the clock tower. So if you've been to Fielding Town, drive around the main roundabout there in the square, and there's the clock tower. So part of the impetus for putting that Millennium Project together, let's get on and get this blinking museum organised. And so for the next couple of years, it was hard work doing fundraising. There was an empty clothing factory in Bowen Street opposite St John's Ambulance, and that was purchased, and the council very kindly gave a loan to towards the cost of it. And the Fielding and District's Historical Society were really strong supporters, so there were another group that were part of the museum opening. And also the other group was the Fielding Genealogy Group. Setting up the museum at 42 Bowen Street. So this is just good to you. I haven't got very many photographs, I'm afraid, from that era. But there was just one I found. This is actually material that came in when we set the archive there up there in 2009. But this one here gives you a view right down the gallery of the museum, showing all the horse-drawn carriages set out. And this was the presentation of the opening of the archive in 2010. That way. Murphy's Law. Stuff always fills the space available. And because of all this interest of the museum opening, the archive coming to town as well, we started to get a lot more interest in people donating bits and pieces and more vehicles. So, and twice in that time from 2002 onwards, the gallery space was extended, and so in 2009 we said we're going to have to move. So Stapleton and Elliott's were the architects. Now the museum is Kawakawa Road and South Street. This was the old Fielding wool spinners, New Zealand's wool spinners. So it was a very long building. And this was the original entrance here, but the council said there's too much traffic, you're going to have to move it. So Stapleton and Elliott designed it, so they moved the entranceway to 127. So you drove in down there, and the first thing you saw was the foyer. This part here was the original building. This part here is what the museum added on. So it includes a commercial kitchen, entrance area, and that bit there is the archive.
3D Creative of Wellington were the concept designers, and they came on and listened to what we wanted to do. So basically, the... Oh, wrong button, sorry. Got finger trouble. Entrance is there. You start here at the museum. So this is the pre-Maori, pre-European Maori settlement, the starting off to clear the bush and then setting up, progressing right down to the end here. At the end here we've got a couple of Higgins buildings, because the building still belongs to Higgins, and they very kindly, they're good philanthropists in this area, and they allow the museum to be there in their building. Right. The one thing that really amazed the professionals that we instigated to help with the concept of designing and displaying everything in the museum, the one thing that really amazed them was our volunteer workforce. Because they're saying, oh, well, you've got an expense here because you're going to have a cost of an electrician or builders or plumbers, etc., etc. And we said, that's fine, we're all volunteers, we can do it. And so the volunteer force dismantled the Bowen Street and created the new display area for the South Street side. One of the main reasons we moved was Ferb Crawshaw. He had amassed a huge collection of John Deere tractors over the years, and he wanted it kept in its entirety. And so he generously gave quite a large donation to the museum, and we set up his tractor collection. So that's the progression of starting the entrance way from Maori, early settlers, horse-drawn, steam engine, and then along to the tractor era. Signage from the first museum suited and fitted in quite well to the new layout, so that was it's still used throughout the gallery. Part of that 1974 100th, the council commissioned a local photographer to enlarge a lot of the old photographs that depicted Fielding Area. And so these are still there on display in the museum. And for some people, they walk in, they see the vehicles, they see the tractors, they see all the other displays, and just having the large pictures at the back helps give them a presentation. But there are also very intricate, long-winded display boards. And some people who go into the museum, we don't see them for another 2 hours because they're standing there and they're reading every word, which is great. As a museum, we have a trust board and we have a whole lot of different teams who run the museum, and we have a mission statement. So our mission statement is to present a physical, pictorial and descriptive social history focusing on the horse-drawn era, agricultural technology, emphasising the impact of rural New Zealand from first settlement to present day. That way. Here's a few of the characters that we have in the museum. This one is a representation of a pretty high-class gig. I thought we'd appreciate that. You notice all the upholstered, padded seat. And this one I thought you'd be interested in because I'll get the right button this time. A lot of people don't appreciate how high up a carriage has to be, because the thing that's pulling your carriage is a horse, and so the shafts have to be relatively straight, and so it's quite high up. And so the first step on a carriage is normally that one, but this particular carriage has an extra step, and when it was being built, commissioned by Mr. Williamson of Williamson Rose, White Human, the best out there, big farmer family, he said, please put an extra step on for my wife. Now, there are several carriages in the museum that you can actually climb up to just see that how high up a carriage was. It's So we had some tactile displays there that showed people the wherewithal of riding. That one. Right, now here's another just plain run-of-the-mill, just a board across for a seat for the driver. And you have to remember that there were no trucks, and so you had carriers and you had contractors, and a lot of the people who had wares to sell, like fruiterers and bakers and butchers, had a cart, and they would load it up and drive around the immediate township of Fielding and make some sales. This, I'm sorry, my fantastic photographer down the back there, we just couldn't get enough angle, could we, to display the four horses that are needed to pull a plough. But this is another representation so people can see just how much blinking work goes into A, catching your horse, B, fitting on what? Harness, collars, bits, blinkers, chains, swingle, I didn't mention the swingle trees, everything else that you need to get that working horse up and running. This is Peter Caruso's wagon. He was a travelling salesman and he was still working in the 1950s in the immediate farming area. Again, like the Fielding town and having the butcher, baker, fruiterer delivering, he would service the outlying communities by turning up and helping the housewives, the farmers' wives, with their needs. We've got one open day we had, this lady turned up and presented us with this photograph. And she said, "You can't actually see me, but I am here. My mother's 8 months pregnant with me and she's buying nappies." So there's lots of 3D and 2D horses throughout the museum to show you an idea of the size, the strength, and the loads that they carried. This is a Phaeton, which was chopped up, the Rolls Royce. And there's another thing. When you went to town, you decided, oh, well, I'll go to town in 2 days' time. You had to catch your horse. You had to put it into the shafts, rein it all up. And then what if it was raining? So there were our carriage makers who also made things like horses that folded down. It's interesting that a lot of these aspects of the horse-drawn carriage translated into the early cars and the early vehicles. I mean, we had one vintage car club come through and they were all out with their cameras and all exuberant about the springing and of the different vehicles, because that again got translated into modern vehicles. And there's another group that's very active in the museum, and that's the Navratry Vintage Machinery Club. This tractor was a Fitch tractor, apparently it's very rare, and it was actually imported into Auckland and then driven from Auckland down no rubber tyres, steel wheels, and I must say they did take the cleats off. Imagine what the road would have been otherwise. Okay, so in comparison to the horse-drawn plough, the John Deere tractors soon made light work of the task. It's interesting to me because tractors and cars and vehicles and machines were all, oh, this is a 4-horsepower vehicle or a 10-horsepower vehicle, relating back to when things were horse-drawn. And this, I've forgotten, there's a formula of something like 33,000, no, I won't go there. they worked it out scientifically. And so it's interesting, as we were driving over today, there was one great big huge tractor ploughing and another big huge tractor doing silage making. When farmers were first setting up here in this whole area, the farmer sometimes couldn't afford to have a horse team and a plough or the implements. So there were contractors who did that work for them. So just driving over today, I was thinking, yeah, it's the same thing, it's gone back. Now there's these huge, great, massive tractors if you're unfortunate to get stuck behind one. Mm-hmm. And they're being contracted out again. So this is a give you a view down of the Crawshaw tractor collection. And those two shops I just showed you, this great big huge display of all the different activities that tractors do. My husband will tell you, he went down one day with the then chairman and photographed 800 pictures of Ferg's collection of photographs. Collection policy, we run as a usual normal museum. We have a structure to us, and so we have a collection policy about what we will do and what we won't do. Like, I think we've got about 20 senior sewing machines, so if somebody comes along with another one, we say thank you, but no. We have temporary displays as well as the permanent display, and this year, Russell Carthew organised a family reunion, and he did like hours and hours of work. He compiled all these wonderful display boards of the family, setting out the history of the family. So one of the Carthews was also a Brent, so some of you might remember the Brent hotel chain. So they had quite an influence in the hotel world as well. And when he'd finished his display, he said, look, you take all the display boards, and he also gave us, I think it was about, about 500 photographs of all those. So wasn't that fantastic? Wouldn't it be wonderful if every family did that? We had an amazing collection of history. Every ANZAC, there's always a display, and this one, because we have a horse-drawn vehicle collection, has displays the purple poppies, which were recognised as being a memorial to the animals that served in the World War. And 2014, the 100th anniversary of the First World War starting, a silent tribute, and some of the volunteers made a cross and had on the name of every soldier from our area who died in the First World War. And behind that on the screen, just this is a silent tribute, just quietly revolving over with a little picture and story of each man. For such displays, we'll borrow or be loaned different exhibits and display items. Holiday time. We have a lot of families coming in and bringing the children. So we have these little ideas of displays to do, which is where having 100 volunteers comes very handy. With, have you got any wooden toys? So if you look, it actually says wooden toys of yesteryear. So this is how you do a display on the cheap. Along the back, we also ask people, in your photo album, have you got a picture of you sitting on your go-kart made out of the apple crate and the old pram wheels or the doll's house that maybe grandfather or father made? And so, yeah, so that the pictures are mainly of all the old pictures of the volunteers. And alongside these children's displays, we have workshops for the children. So we've got a couple of retired woodwork teachers from high schools, and they relish the fact that they can get in and do all sorts of work with the children. And of course, when they make something out of wood, but probably the most favourite little area is the poker work. They're making wonderful designs and artwork on their creations. What do we collect? Because our emphasis is on the horse-drawn era and agriculture, there's anything to do with that collection policy. And the archive has a similar collection policy. If it's fielding, districts and community, then we'll usually accept it. Quite often we might not get a tractor donated, but we'll get something that's just come in recently is the O'Reilly Forry. It was a basic two-room forry that was upcountry Rangawahia way. And it's been donated, so it's been deconstructed and reconstructed inside the museum. And along with that actual building came a whole lovely pile that's been archived of photographs of the family who lived in it, stories, letters, lots of interesting facts about the house and their Riley family. The Building and District Community Archive. As I said, we collect anything. If it's building, it's district's community, then we'll take it. And our boundary is the, where are we? Tararuas, Ruahines, that side, over to the Rangitiki River, and then right down to the Manawatu River. But to bear in mind that originally this area went right down to Otaki, so we're flexible. If somebody says, Mike, I think we've got some records of a family who lived in Woodville, but their two sons came and went to high school in Fielding, and then one of them got a job working at John Cole Department Factory, and department shop, and so we'll collect that. We're flexible. Mission Street School class registers from 1959. They just came in this year, and Lytton Street School were having a tidy up, and they said, well, would you like them? Because if you don't like them, then we'll probably, they'll be binned. So we said, yep, we'll take them. Because we thought, they're a record of all the students who were in each class, and also, while the school registers list all the students who went to such and such a school, who lists the teachers? This is me speaking of an ex-teacher here. So we collected them and kept them all. As they were each dusted and cleaned, a name was taken of each year and the teachers for that year. And these were put into... I've got a couple of outworkers for the archive, and they very kindly sit there on their computers when they've got nothing better to do, and they'll electronically make a list. And so that's added to our records as well. Lytton Street School, yep, as well as getting the class registers, the rolls, we got a whole lot of photographs and a whole lot of other things as well. A few years back, we actively went to Lytton Street School and said, school holidays are coming up, end of December, right through January. Would you let us borrow your registers, class registers, for that term? So two of us spent our school holidays photocopying them and putting them in. So, and once again, we got people to transcribe them and put them on electronics. School rolls are really, really important. This is my genealogist hat on, because as I've said there, sometimes we'll get somebody coming in, I'm not quite sure, I think my grandfather went to one of the schools here, I don't know which one, and not quite sure when it was, because I don't know when the family moved away again. I'll be very kind. We'll go and look and see. And if we can find that person, we can say, okay, they were at school 1903 to 1910, and they started when they turned five. And these school registers also list the parents' names and sometimes the home address and the father's occupation and then why they left school. And it's interesting, back in the early 1900s, domestic services. So that was the daughter leaving and going into staying at home, probably helping mum with the other 10 children in the family. Yeah, so they're quite valuable. You might think, oh, school roll, but there are a lot of things that are quite useful. So we've got nearly all the schools. Still need North Street School and Intermediate. The high school had their 100th last year, the year before. And so they all have done all their records. It's quite good fun sitting there looking through my kids and saying, oh, isn't that what they did? Manchester Street School is having its 150th this year, as is the town of Fielding, by the way. And there's a reunion in a couple of weeks' time. So if any of you have Manchester Street School contacts, then there's a Facebook page you can look at and have a look. One of our very first conservation jobs, projects, when we started in 2009, was the photographs of Manchester Street School classes. And Mr. Bray, the local photographer, he left his entire collections and someone had handed it in, which was fantastic, and there were a lot of glass plates. And the person sitting over there, by the way, with his electronic wizardry, was the one who turned the negative glass plates into positive images for us. So thank you. They're still used.
Thank you.
Further projects. Now, books being written on the early field and home.
Oh, I was meant to be showing you all these too and never did. There's a whole lot of books here that got created, produced when there was a particular reason. This one was written by Mr. Gibson when Fielding turned about 60, and that's the purchase and settlement of the Manchester block. This one here was written by Mr. Cleveley, and it was 1974 book, Pioneering to Prosperity, 1874 to 1974. This bit here is the index. We've gone through and indexed the people named in it because it didn't have an index. This one here was put out by the Fielding Historical Society, and that coincided with the Millennium Clock Project. And it's the people who first came out on the ships as part of the Manchester Block Settlement. You all know about the Manchester Block Settlement, of course. If not, come over to the museum and you can read about it. This book, when we decided we ran out of copies, let's reprint it. Ah, we'll go to Fisher Print and they can reprint some more. Nope, nobody could find the original script. So it got rewritten. And Dorothy Pilkington, who wrote that first one, also co-wrote this one, and Janet Doyle from the archive reformatted the whole book, so we've been able to. And modern digital age, look how much we've improved. It's quite interesting, you know, like this one, there was so-and-so says that they came out and they were cousins, but they weren't, they were brothers. So we were able to verify, get that one right. Okay, I finally got it. Halves of Fielding Families, and on the front cover it has the front parlour, wonderful mantelpiece, and on the back, at the back of the house, it has the coal range. So this was a project that instigated by the archive. And it was wonderful going around and knocking on doors. I'm not very good at cold knocking. your house is quite historical. Would you be... And most people said, yep, come in, and show us everything. So much so that this one here, this is the Lang's home at Queen Street, and this is at the 2021, and it was the first home to the first Presbyterian minister in 1875. Since then, it's been, as you can see, re-roofed. Some of it's been reclad, repiled, rewired, and loved. And the joineries even, the joineries are now double-glazed. This is the passion of the people who still live in these houses. Yes, come in. Now, in the original part of the house, it's actually they were very short of nails, because nails weren't important, the blacksmith had to make the nails. So the actual studs are mortars and tenon joints. Look, we'll come up into the attic. I'll just get the ladder out and we'll go up and see if we can find them. So we couldn't actually find them under all the pink beds, but that's just to give you an idea of, wow, look at that. And another part of the ceiling, while we were still trying to find the mortars and tenon joints, he said he'd actually lowered the ceiling for insulation and heating costs. But look, there's still the original blinking wallpaper. So this here shows you the house as side view. Now, I'll try and hit the right button. And that bit there is the front bit on the street. This bit here was the next bit that was added, and that's now been converted to the lounge. When it was added on, it was the kitchen. So the next bit, they've moved the kitchen back to this area here, so that's the new kitchen. And then this was the last addition, and that's the bathroom and the laundry.
Prior to that, you used to have to go out the kitchen door and run across, hopefully it wasn't raining, to the loo. So, it's good to see something that's still going. A lot of them are not so wonderful. This one here is an early photograph of the Carr home that's on Kimbolton Road, or it was. So Charles Carr was an early auctioneer, land agent, do-it-all man. If it had some money in it, I think he did it. Now, recently the All Black team of New Zealand had Sam Whitelock, Aaron Smith and Cody Taylor. They all went to play rugby at So Charles Carr, we have quite a few important historic public figures from Fielding. Palmerston North is the same, I know, but Fielding has it. And Charles Carr's eldest son was Sir Roderick Carr. No? He was Air Vice Marshal of the RAF, Second World War. Did I get it right?
Marshal of the RAF.
Oh, sorry, Marshal. Oh, even higher than Air Vice Marshal. He's ex-Air Force. Right. So this is the front of the house being removed. It was purchased by Arua Women's Club and they converted the whole of the front of the house into their meeting room, and so they needed to enlarge it. And after the conversion, and look, very conveniently labelled February 1984, there it is, all finished. Mobility ramp and used for a good many years. The reason I have these photographs is because Arua Women's Club brought all their records down and left them at the archives. And it's now gone. The Arua Women's Club moved and on-sold their building. But it was one that got lifted up and is now out there at Shannon. Good to know some of these are still in existence. The Beattie family. They came to New Zealand in 1873. James had been involved in the banking world from Scotland and then London, and he was appointed to be the manager at Nelson. He got shoulder-tapped a couple of years later, and the family moved in 1875 to Fielding. Their house is built on 49 Betty Street, and it's in the book. Most of the children are married into local families, and as you can see there, James died far too young at 54. I love this so much. You know, you normally have the prim and proper, but you can't smile because you've got to hold your face for a minute or so while the film of the picture is taken. Look, the teenager looking very engaged, isn't she? And over his shoulder, there's two blazers, a toy, down to her little sister. This is Totty. She's got a book. She's looking at her sister holding her doll. Down here, the brother James, he's got his dog. Older sister's doing knitting. I'm not quite sure what this one's doing. And there's James holding toddler, and Eliza holding next up. What a woman she must have been. Just came in 2 months ago. Lindsay Morgan, granddaughter of Ada Beattie, donated this embroidered bag to the museum. It belonged to Eliza Beattie, and the family story says that Eliza embroidered the bag to occupy her time on the sea journey out to New Zealand. Here's the bag. It doesn't finish there. How about that? That's one of the pictures from our records that we've got in the archive. So here's the house on Beattie Street, 1875. It was one of the first two-storey buildings in Fielding, so quite common. It got unsold when Eliza was widowed and went to live northward to live with one of her married daughters. And the Lindsay family, they owned a drapery shop on Winchester Square. So if you, next time you're in the square, you're going to look at the clock tower and go, I know all the story about that. Walk round by the old post office and you'll see there's the entrance to their shop, Lindsay's, on Manchester Square. And the grounds include a tennis court, mini golf, swimming pool. If you go down Beattie Street now, you would look out for number 49. It's now down a long drive and at the back, and presumably all the houses in the front are built on the tennis court, mini golf and swimming pool area. So this is it, 2024. I'm not quite sure, but I think it's still for sale. I haven't heard that it's sold. So that bit there, that's an original 1875 bit. The Lindsay's added on that front bit. They added on probably about that much, and then the next owner went upstairs and added on to that again. A house can tell a lot of stories, can't it?
Mm-hmm.
Now the current book that's underway is on building businesses. And so this is A.H. Sutton. So you'll notice I've just about got the hang of this. Premier Centaurs. There's a bike shop there. J.B. Clarkson was the owner of the bike shop. And as I think, I haven't worked it out yet, but a lot of the people who lived downstairs in the shop had a house and lived upstairs above it. And so this is Sutton's draper shop here. There's all the staff lined up. A.H. Sutton Drapers. Here are four or five lines of everyday need boards that illustrate the values that are offered by this firm. I'm writing this book because our generation, we're fairly screwed up and know what a draper is. But you go down a few generations that we now have, and who's going to know what a draper was? And another sense of humour. Houses for advertising. Serviceable coverings for intellectual domes. In other words, hacks. And this is the second shop, 2023, still there. McLean's bookseller and stationer, that's another one. That was opposite Carthew's bookshop.
Yeah.
And McLean's bookshop, there's an advert for all the books they've got on sale. This is the bit I like. The largest stock of sixpenny editions in the district. We're very lucky in those days. Sixpence for a book. And there it is. This is Focal Point next to it, and they've also now purchased that building. So the intent of this new book is to show how circumstances change, so we don't have very many salary shops these days. This is the actual archive. We conserve everything to New Zealand archive standards. We have the great big huge volume continuum, which is how you should archive things. So we try to be good. So everything is dusted, cleaned, destapled, desellotaped, listed, catalogued. So we try to be good archivists. Here's the conserving team at work, brushing things, cleaning things. You can see just through there, that's the doorway into the actual archive, and there's that whole wall is what we call our framed images, so the big photographs, some are still in frames, all the school sports photographs, everything. And that room is air-conditioned and humidity and temperature control. And just round, tucked round the corner, the data entry people doing their good work. Marion's there. She's got a photograph. We put the photograph on the photocopier and scan it, and it goes and can be recorded into the Past Perfect catalogue. Past Perfect, it's specially built for small museums and archives program. So it stores donor information automatically if you need a deed of gift or a thank you yeah, we can draw that. So this is the past perfect when we turn it on and we get into our work. So research, you can go by keyword, you can go by people, you can go by search term, you can do a quick find. Activities, so this is accessioning. If it's out on exhibit, got something coming in, accessioning. It also got context, so whoever gave us the particular piece of information, then we've got a record of that as well. It's quite a good little system. And that's just to show you a form that comes up. Okay, where to from here? Museums have been around for a long, long time. And archives, cartwrights have been around for thousands of years. So collecting, cataloguing and storing records is ongoing. Yes, they can be digitised, and yes, they can be stored electronically, but the original documents still need to be retained for the future. There's something about having that tactile object and piece of paper, and they give us an experience. And just to leave you with a thought, history is an explanation of the present.